let's have some fun. Think about what's in your fridge and let's ask the chatbot to give you some ideas for dinner. Let's have it write a poem, write about the content that you're teaching tomorrow, and see if this is something that you would want to share with a group of kids.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make It Mindful, the podcast where we explore how to keep schools relevant by looking through the lens of mindfulness and asking the question, what's really worth paying attention to here? I'm Seth Fleischauer. My co-host, Lauren Pinto, is on a break, but together we delve into the world of education by interviewing change makers and focusing on practical, transformative solutions for teaching. This week, my guest is Monica Burns. Monica, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited for you to be here to have this conversation. Can you please introduce yourself for our listeners, those of them who don't know you already?
Absolutely. So I am a former New York City public school teacher, still based here on the East Coast. And for the past decade or so, I've been writing and sharing about education technology on my blog, classtechtips.com, and my podcast, the Easy EdTech Podcast.
Excellent. I also was a New York City public school teacher through New York City Teaching Fellows. What was your experience and how did you move into the role that you're in now?
So I have lots of friends who are in the fellows program or teaching fellows. I had my undergraduate degree in elementary education. So I came in a pretty traditional route back to my home state of New York after doing my undergraduate degree in Delaware. And so that classroom experience, the last year, 2 years or so, we were one-to-one with iPad. And that wasn't the first school, you know, to do it, but it was pretty early on in the whole conversation of one-to-one. And that's what really led me into the work that I do today. You know, Apple Education, I'm an Apple Distinguished Educator, had asked me to come and share some of the things I was working on in my classroom. I was like, sure, I'll come share it with a couple of teachers, you know, about their thing that they were doing after school one day. And it turned out to be like a couple hundred teachers. And, you know, their, you know, party line there was, if we told you how many people, you probably wouldn't have come. So after sharing some of my favorite just strategies and apps for the classroom, you know, we're going back now to like 2011, 2012-ish, I started getting questions about what was my blog, where could we follow, right? All those sort of things I didn't have answers to. And that's when I started classtechtips.com. And so my blog, I've been blogging and sharing them there, you know, since 2012. And that really turned into the professional development work that I do now, the writing work that I do now, really around ways to make ed tech easier.
And so obviously people, when you presented that first time, people must have felt it very valuable. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been asking for all these resources, your blogs and everything. I'm wondering, what do you think it was about you as a teacher, the mindset that you had when you were using technology that made it so that when you shared your story, it resonated with people so deeply?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the elementary school teacher, the middle school, high school teacher skill set is sometimes underrated, right? Outside of a classroom setting, right? This ability to just get to the key points, highlight what's really important, you know, restate something in a way so that people can understand, right, what resonates with them. And I didn't have a public speaking background. I didn't have a, you know, theater, high school theater background or anything like that, right, to jump up on a stage. But just that idea of being able to bring it down to the basics, highlight what was really important, put things in context with different examples is still something I really strive to do when sharing, you know, and that, you know, happens often organically for teachers in a classroom setting, right? They're used to doing that. Right, to make sure everyone's on board. And I do think it's an important transfer right into professional learning as well.
Yeah, and I think it takes a special kind of mind to be able to do that in a way that resonates with people, where you really do have to go through the work of identifying what's important so that those are the things that you can communicate. And on your website, you talk about training teachers to use technology with intention. I loved that term because we talk about on Make It Mindful, the mindful application of technology. And I'm wondering if you can unpack that that phrase for us a little bit. What does it mean to you to use technology with intention?
I think it really does come back, right, to the phrase that you both use, right? Make it mindful, and having a clear purpose, clear intention right from the jump. I often use the phrase tasks before apps. That was my first book with ASCD, right? Like, what is our goal here, right? The technology is fantastic. It's bright and shiny sometimes, can grab our attention. If we're at a conference, we might run to something on an expo hall floor to learn more. But when it comes back to what our primary goal is, we really want to be strategic and make sure we're using the time that we have with students, with colleagues, wisely and with intention. So, you know, that can mean a few different things in different learning environments. It might mean that we're embracing our place and really sticking within our learning management system to make the most of it, even if it only does 90%, not 100% of what we wish it could do, right? It might mean revisiting our tool belt, particularly at the end of the year, to say, like, what is messy in our digital world that we want to let go of and not bring into, right, the new school year. So I think it can mean a few different things in different environments, but just keeping it simple and streamlined and anchored in what we know is best, and the technology just being that extra layer to help us do something that we couldn't do at all before, we couldn't do as well before, or now with an extra ability to scale, you know, our impact.
And so, in that way, is your impact kind of goal agnostic, right? Like, you come in and you're just depending on them to know what their goals are. Do you help people work to discover what their goals are, or are you coming in with that understanding that they have that in mind and you're simply helping them get there?
A combination, right? So sometimes, particularly if I'm coming in like just for the day or in a short burst where we can't maybe go as deep or as long as I would like to, you know, I'm asking people to think about what's on your to-do list this month, right? What is your goal for students, right, in the next few weeks? Like, take that, hold on to that. I often bring that up if I'm with a group that has a lot of different things that they're working on, you know, a fourth grade teacher from one side of the district, a ninth grade teacher teaching something different from another side of the district, and we just happen to be together, you know, for a half day or a full day or 90 minutes. So having them think about what they're working on, and then we're unpacking like what's possible there. Okay, so knowing that that's your content area, if you want to open up that to more students, where can we go to look for audio-based resources, or where can we look at more creative outputs for kids? Or maybe we're all together thinking of ways to get more creative with formative assessment and a deeper picture of student learning. Take what's on your, you know, to-do list, your success criteria for this next unit, and bring that into your own exploration, right, of a strategy and perhaps a tool or two that I might show to bring that strategy to life.
It sounds like a lot of what you do is exposing people to the options that are out there and kind of holding their hand as they engage with something that might otherwise be a little scary. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about your work on like mindset shift, mm-hmm. right? Like there's a lot of strong feelings when it comes to technology in the classroom. And I think when we talk about the newest technology that's taking education by storm right now, AI, mm-hmm. I think that there's a unique set of emotional implications of the use of that technology, that very human-like technology.
Yeah.
How much do you operate in this realm of like psychology, emotion, trying to get people to change their view and mindset of technology so that they can be in that curious mindset?
Yeah, it's particularly with the AI of it all, I'm really trying to encourage people to feel their feelings and hold on to more than one feeling at the same time, right? Like it is
hard.
Okay. And right, harder said than done sometimes, right? But you know, it is okay to be a little hesitant here, right? I would encourage you to be hesitant as you're opening up a chatbot for the first time or for the fourth time, right? And giving it another go, right? I would encourage you to have some of that healthy hesitation, right, through the process. But then, you know, I'm trying my best to introduce examples that are very concrete, that connect back to someone's everyday workflow, whether it's that, you know, moment that we often have in the morning of looking at our busy inbox, or at the end of the day saying, I don't even know where to start in answering this email or developing this reminder for families for a field trip for next week. So I try to identify things that are really authentic in a professional setting, but then particularly with this type of technology, a little bit different than what I might do in other areas, but particularly with the AI, really leaning in. And this is a phrase from Scott Belsky that I really love, which is that novelty precedes utility, right? Like, let's have some fun. Like, think about what's in your fridge right now, and let's ask the chatbot to give you some ideas for dinner. Like, let's have it write a poem, right, about the content that you're teaching tomorrow, right, and see if this is something that you would want to share with a group of kids. Like, write an invitation to a barbecue you're hosting later this month. Like, just play, because I think that's where some of the confidence building, the capacity building takes place, and just wheels spinning to say, like, oh, if I do this, I bet I can do this, right? And so if someone might not feel curious about this technology right at the beginning, it can help, you know, spur some of that so that they start to wonder how this could save them time or make their life easier, right, in a professional setting, right, not just helping them, right, with a new organizational system for their garage, right, which might be pretty practical and a great use case, but not exactly what I'm coming in for when I'm visiting schools or districts.
Yeah, I love that idea of play first. I was in a workshop the other day with a teacher who used it to plan a date night between her and her husband. And it piques the curiosity, and I think speaks to the ubiquity of the applications of the technology and why you would approach it a little bit differently, because it is not just a school tool, right? It goes way, way beyond that. And I'm wondering, because your resources right now on your website, you've got resources that are designed to save time on tedious tasks. I really like that terminology, tedious tasks. Yeah. I think that when teachers hear that, they know what you're talking about. And then brainstorming creativity help generate ideas for assessment, differentiation, student engagement goals. I feel like this is where, like, we as an industry have kind of arrived at, like, these are some very clear applications of AI to the teacher profession. I'm wondering if you see beyond the horizon a little bit into where you think this might be going after this initial round of early adoption.
Yeah. So, you know, right now, for those of us who are spending a lot of time in it, right, thinking about it, maybe have ChatGPT as one of the 10 browsers up, you know, open on our screen, right, at a given time, you know, we are in it. And I think for those, you know, that group that spent the past 6 months, the past year and a half playing, like, they're going to be ready for the next thing soon, which may be more of an integration, you know, into a tool that they use all the time. Maybe it's a Chrome extension that they've added to their personal email so that it reads their email and it suggests a response. Like, if you're going to say yes to this, here's a response. If you're going to say no, here's the response, right? Or something that's going to help them learn something new, right? Or tutor them on a new topic, right, outside of education that they're learning. So for that group of early adopters, I think they're going to start interacting with integrations within tools that go beyond jumping from a web browser to another web browser just to access a chatbot. But for the vast majority inside of education, outside of education, I think they're still a year away, you know, 6 months away from opening up that chatbot in the first place, right? They might have a, you know, someone in their life who sends them a birthday card invitation with an image that generated with AI. And then they're at that birthday party and they're having a conversation and they're like, I didn't even know that was possible, right? Or, you know, we're entering into an election cycle where they might get a robocall, right, with audio that sounds a little funky, or they might come across something on TikTok, or if TikTok's not here, you know, in a couple weeks, something else, like on Instagram Reels, right? Like, who knows? But, you know, I came across a few during, you know, the Super Bowl football season of Patrick Mahomes saying something that I was like, I don't think that's what he would say. And when I took that double, you know, the double check, the extra look on my scroll, you know, it was pretty clear that that was, you know, a deep fake or AI generated content. And so that's kind of that wave where, you know, I'm thinking, I'm hoping, right, that people will start having interactions that they begin to question that then makes them think about their particular use cases.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a fascinating application of the technology. And it really, I think, gets to that question of like, what is reality, right? Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, we find ourselves in a world that is inundated with information that, you know, can be true or not true, can, yeah. It depends on who your sources are and who you believe. Right now, you can still, it's like, you can kind of tell when it's a deep fake. There's yeah, just something mm-hmm. a little bit off about it, but I imagine yeah. that is not going to last very long. Nope. And then we're just going to be catapulted into this space where, you know, essentially, I mean, the internet is already a giant, you know, box of confirmation bias. Right. And imagine if you can just make a video that is provides the evidence for what you want to believe. Mm-hmm. And it really brings in coursework like media literacy and digital citizenship, some of these things that are not currently major priorities in education, and kind of brings them to the forefront of students being able to navigate this new world where they're going to have all these resources. And I'm wondering if you can zoom in on the students for a moment. Mm-hmm. With this world coming down the pipeline, how do you think the experience of a student, the role of a student, the learning path of a student should change based on what we anticipate are the changes that will happen to the world because of this technology?
Well, one big area is just access, right? You know, this is the sort of thing that can really widen the gap in terms of, you know, what people's experiences are like, right? We want to make sure that everyone has some understanding of what's possible, right? So that there's not this larger gap in terms of, I know how to use this and leverage this, and I have no idea what this technology is, right? So that's one area of just acknowledging that students may use this, but not everyone is going to use this organically. It's going to know even where to get started. And if we want to prepare students for a world where 3 years from now, it's the norm to interact in these spaces, we want to keep that right in mind. So that's kind of one area from the student perspective. The other, and I hear this a lot in conversations, you might too, right, is just the really valid concerns from teachers around assessment, right? And one side, right, they understand that, okay, right, this essay might not be the best way anymore to have a student share their learning, right? If they can type in a unique prompt and make some, you know, and refine that output a few times and get something they can give to me. But they also are tackling with the fact that they're still preparing students for high school and college where they will have to write an essay. Yeah. So like, how do I do both of those things? I can't just ignore that. And I also, right, can't use this as my primary form of assessment anymore. So we're very much in that kind of messy middle right now, I think, in terms of the practicality, right? And then understanding, you know, where we're headed and wanting to honor that at the same time. And so I hear a lot of that from educators, and I totally feel right where they're coming from. I think it's super duper valid, but it may be also, right, we hold on to that and that's true and we're still doing that kind of work. But at the same time, we may want to start thinking through more creative applications of content that kids are interacting with. Perhaps it's not just write the essay, right? It's write the essay and go interview someone and create a mm-hmm. podcast interview, right, mm-hmm. around that, you know, the topic and the expert that you've spoken to, or write that essay. I sure hope you didn't do it with ChatGPT because none of these checkers can actually give me a good answer. But I'm going to ask you now to put that in the background, right, of your Flipgrid video and talk me through your process, right, of what decisions you made as a writer, right? So there's got to be an extra layer there, right, while we're working out what the expectation is for students, right, in their present learning environments and their future learning environments.
And I like those two examples that you used, social learning and metacognition. These are two things that are good for learning anyway. Mm-hmm. And something that I really appreciate about the technology is that it's really forcing teachers to have these conversations, to reconsider what they're expecting from students, to challenge themselves, to come up with new ways to get at things they know are important, but perhaps they haven't had the bandwidth to get there. Maybe AI can help them get there, right? Like, you know, how can I take this assignment and adapt it for a world where I don't know if my student cheated or not using this technology to write an essay. What else can I do? Yeah. Right. And so I appreciate the opportunity for educators and education to consider, you know, what really are we doing here? Right. Like, why do we ask students to write an essay? Why do we ask them to do the things that we do when there are now machines who can do the same thing? I've always been an early adopter of this type of stuff. I've always erred on the side of like, let's experiment and find out versus like banning and blocking. But we work with an English language program overseas where students are learning the language as a foreign language. And we're talking about junior high students. And we really looked into what the technology can provide them in terms of answers that, would replace some of the thinking that they would be doing in the language. And we determined, and it kills me to say this out loud, but we determined that like a ban and block situation is probably better in that particular scenario where the students need to learn the language, need to actually like formulate sentences and think in the language. And the temptation of ChatGPT just being right there for them to use. Like, we didn't want to get into a situation where we were policing them, where we're like accusing people of cheating if they're not cheating. You know, all that type of stuff just seems very outside the purview of what a teacher should be doing with their time. And so we advocated for a ban and block situation, which is crazy to me. It's crazy that I'm saying that out loud when it comes to technology and how much I've been on the forefront. But I think that it speaks to the complexity of this particular technology. Do you see situations where ban and block might be the answer? Are you advising districts, school leaders on what their policies should be?
So I'm trying to kind of stay in my lane when it comes to the instructional use cases for teachers, what they can do, right? From a productivity standpoint, I've had plenty of casual conversations on like, what are you doing? What are you thinking about this? But when it comes to the policy piece and particularly, you know, the legality and the privacy component, right? I'm doing a lot more listening, right? Than advising in terms of what that can look like. And I would say, you know, observationally, I think that it's interesting some of the spaces where they might use one of these tools alongside with students in a really transparent way. I think it is an interesting use case to fostering conversations, right? If it's a student that does have permission to use a space, right? It's in the walled garden, kind of all of those things. You know, I think that, and this is not a perfect comparison, but in a similar way to the way that we think about, like, I really need to have a foundation of my times tables in order to be able to do heavy math programming, right? I really need to have an understanding of keyboarding in order to get my thoughts out really fast right now when voice to text isn't perfect. Like, you need to have some level of a foundation in order to make the most of a chatbot. So for students who are interested and excited about that space, I think it will take them not terribly long to realize that they need more context, right? That the more they know about something, the more successful they can be when leveraging a chatbot. And that's where I get excited from an educator, professional, instructional planning side of things is you're working with a lot of expertise and experience, right? You can really make this tool work for you. And for students who don't have that context quite yet, right? Their output is just not going to get as strong, right? It's not going to go as far. They aren't able to prompt or refine at the same level as someone who has a lot of content area expertise. And so I don't think that this is a problem that will work itself out exactly, but I do think that that will influence the student experiences and provides, you know, a level of push, right, for folks to think about what can we do to introduce students to these spaces as they become more readily available for them and really reinforce that need for some context and some content expertise if they really want to make the most of it.
Yeah, because to make the most of it, you need that critical thinking piece. And to have that critical thinking piece, you need the building blocks that go into your critique, right? Last question. You do a lot of talking to people about this area. What are you hearing from teachers, from administrators, that is kind of the most common things that you're hearing from people? And what are some of the most surprising things that you're hearing?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I'm hearing a lot, which, you know, I'm always glad to hear, is that I didn't know this was possible. I hadn't tried that yet, or this change. I walked in here thinking one thing, and I walked out of here thinking something very different about what AI could do for me. And, you know, I don't, you know, I think a lot about that in the conversations I'm having with educators, like, how can this become relevant for you, right? I don't need everyone to have a massive epiphany, right, when we spend time together, but if they can have that one thing that might shave an hour off of their week of planning time for the rest of the school year, you know, what a gift that is for them to be able to save, you know, a day or two when it comes to the end of the year, because they were able to automate or speed something up, or just work, you know, smarter, not harder. So a lot of people are still in fact-finding mode about generative AI and what it means for them. So that's one big thing that I'm hearing. And then I'm hearing something else, you know, that I've heard forever now, and it's valid. So I don't mean to, I'm not, you know, being dismissive of it, is that there's just not enough time for all the things we're being asked to do. And I worked with a school in St. Louis right at the start of the calendar year, and they had me come in, you know, to talk about the AI and instructional planning. And they were really adamant, right? This, we don't want this to be, to feel like one more thing. We want this to feel like it's taking off some of those things from a teacher's plate. So, you know, for those kind of things that I'm still hearing a lot of, I'm hopeful, right, that these small, right, use cases can actually have a big impact in addressing a super valid concern from educators in all roles.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, Monica, thank you so much for your time today, for your sharing your candor, your expertise. You mentioned a couple of things up at the top here, but just as a reminder to our listeners, where can they find you and your work on the internet?
Yeah. So everything is at classtechtips.com. That's where you can find the second edition of my book, EdTech Essentials, which comes out the first week of June. That's where you can find my Easy EdTech podcast. And just like the classtechtips.com, classtechtips is where I am on Instagram, on Twitter, Pinterest, you name it.
It's a great handle. Well, thank you so much again for being here. To our listeners, if you'd like to support the podcast, please share this with a friend, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. Thank you, as always, to our editor, Lucas Salazar. And remember that if you'd like to create positive change in education, you must first make it mindful. See you next time.